Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, that's right. We got a long time to go here in this galaxy far, far away. It's Star Wars podcasting on post-show recaps. It's your second round of Phantom Menace, because that's exactly what you want, right? More Phantom Menace. And this isn't even the end of it. So much Phantom Menace. This is a Phantom menu that we are serving up here. Course number two. I'm joined here by two folks who are not thrilled with that Phantom menu line that I just tested out. It came up. I served it up. Kevin Mahadeo, deeply disappointed.
I'm popping a lightsaber. The viewers can't see it right now, but if I was nearby,
be careful.
I'd be coming for you.
Semantics, sir.
Please don't refer to it as popping a lightsaber.
Yeah.
Phrasing. Are we not? Are we not doing phrasing anymore?
I don't know.
It's fine if we're not. I just wish you would told me.
Don't know how to feel about that. Latanya Stark's here as well. Latanya, do you want to say something to offset what Kevin just did and what I did first?
Hi, everybody.
Have some kind of cool phrase to load down.
Yeah, I'll just say the truth, which is that pimpin' ain't easy.
If there's one major takeaway from the Phantom Menace, it's that pimpin' ain't easy. I think
the third certainty of life, taxes, and that pimpin' it ain't easy.
It's interesting. It's interesting that you bring up death and taxes, because these are hallmark qualities of
Literally
Star Wars.
The
Phantom Menace, episode one. So, of course, we've already done our recap. If you have not listened to that yet, you should. It's myself and Rob Sesternino going through the entire movie of The Phantom Menace, about 2.5 hours long, a long way to go through that first long time to go recap. And here we're doing what I told Kevin and Latanya in advance the other week when we were recording, or before we started recording, WandaVision, because we're recapping WandaVision. If you didn't know that, you now do. We record WandaVision podcasts. New episode coming out here real soon. We'll be back on Mondays, every Monday, with some WandaVision coverage. Check that out on the Everything is Super podcast feed here on Post Show Recap. So I was telling Kevin and Latina, I was like, all right, here's what I want to do. Duel of debates. Because you know me, and I can't resist. It's there, and I see it. It's like the big glowing blue Dirk Diggler letters that pops onto the screen for me. Duel of debates. And I'm like, that's what we'll do for the podcast. And so what we're going to do here today is, I've already talked a lot about my takes on The Phantom Menace. Kevin and Latanya, stalwart co-hosts of the Mandalorian podcast, you're going to be here throughout the long time to go journey, giving your takes on the projects that we're stopping and talking about along the way. And perhaps we shall get into some duel of debates over the course of the podcast, as you will present your takes from the movie. We'll talk them through. It may happen, Latanya, that the negotiations will be short. You know, maybe we'll all just agree on everything that we have to say here.
I mean, I can't imagine a time when we have not all just agreed on everything.
Yeah. You know,
I can't even think of one time.
It's never
happened. What I assume is going to happen is, if we say something that Josh has disagreed with, he will just funnel in some very visible gas into the room that we'll all be able to see and escape rather quickly. And rather than wait to see if it takes effect for a reasonable amount of time, he'll just be like, ah, just open the doors. I'm sure they're dead. It's fine.
Not unless it's Tenet style, in which case.
I don't get that reference yet.
Oh, yeah. Latanya, didn't you just watch Tenet for the first time? How was that?
Tenet for the first time. I am one of five people in the United States of America that loves that movie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say who has seen that movie.
Well, that's true. There's also that.
Yeah.
Yes, I think I'm one of five people that enjoy that movie. The other, not even people in the cast, just Christopher Nolan, and I think the other people work for The Ringer. But other than that, like, nothing.
I feel like I need to watch it. I think I'm going to end up probably being on your side, Latanya, because like Interstellar, I actually really like. I know a lot of people didn't like that one. Last night, like not last night, I think a few nights ago, we rewatched Prestige.
So
holy
good.
Crap. That might be my, I think that might be
Nolan's best movie. All right, so our first Phantom Menace take is that the Prestige is the best Christopher Nolan movie.
First take.
Yeah. And we agree.
Second take. Yeah. And it not as bad as everyone says.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, we're getting somewhere.
We're doing great with The Phantom Menace by talking about anything besides The Phantom Menace.
Let's David Washington and The Phantom Menace.
So I guess like before, so you've both prepared like three takes about The Phantom Menace to lead us through the conversation. And, I guess before we do that, I would like to just like get like sort of like the overarching take, not necessarily even of the movie itself, but if that's where you want to go with it, that's great. But I would be more inclined to like know about like your experience with the movie. For example, Latanya, and I'll start with you, is that I know that you just watched The Phantom Menace for the first time for this.
I did.
Yeah, how'd that go?
I did. I mean, I enjoyed some of it, actually. I enjoyed quite a bit of it. I think that there are a lot of meetings in this movie that could have been emails. but, you know, Yeah, there were things that I enjoyed. I actually enjoyed the pod racing scene, which I know not a lot of people do, because, you know, the whole point of it is that if you're a spectator, you can't see most of it.
Right.
But I enjoyed the pod racing scene. I thought that was really cool. I loved little Jake Lloyd and his performance. I thought it was really cute and endearing. And I am all here for Padme Amidala. Just all in for either version. The Keira Knightley version was a little wooden, and I definitely tell when I was just like, oh, but the fact that they, you know, digitally lowered Natalie Portman's voice so that she and Keira Knightley would sound more alike, and they really are kind of dead ringers for one another. And then we get that scene at the, like near the end before the big climactic battle where Natalie Portman comes forward and reveals herself to be the actual Queen Amidala, and then, you know, not only like humbles herself to the people of Naboo, right, to get their assistance, but also very much joins in the fight. It was just really cool to see threads of Princess Leia in the performance that Natalie Portman put forward, even if she was more focused on concentrating on graduating Harvard.
Yeah, that's right. Kevin, how many times have you seen The Phantom Menace?
Several. When it came out, I think I saw it twice in theaters. And I'd definitely seen it at least twice more after that.
And so I know you're a super cool guy, and you're like, Phantom Menace sucks. And I know that's where we're going. You know, I just know that's where we're going. And that's fine. Hey, it's all right.
We are, but
that's okay. But did you know that? Did you feel that right away?
No, yeah. Not at all. And you know, that's what I was going to say. Like, my experience watching the prequels was really weird. You know, it was one of those things, because I remember walking out of each of the prequels being really jazzed and really hyped. And I think that happens at times when you're really into something, especially when you're younger. When I saw this, I was a teen. You know, you walk out with the excited feeling. I remember really loving Superman Returns when I first walked out of it. And, you know, I've gone up and down on that movie a lot. But I remember we walked out of Phantom Menace. It was me, like one of my best friends, Fernando, and his cousin Louis.
I was going to say, it's got to be Fernando.
Of course.
Shout out.
We saw that, all three of us saw it together. And we remember, I remember us walking out and talking about the stuff we really loved and like the lightsabers and how cool things were and the music and how awesome it was to be in Star Wars world again. And we went home and we're just like, we need to watch the original again. And we started to try to watch A New Hope and we all fell asleep because we were very late at that point. And we were pretty high on the movie. And it's one of those things where after time, it definitely takes a turn. And it took a bit of a quicker turn, I think, with this, you know, once the excitement wore off. And now, as an adult, and with a more critical eye, this movie. This movie is not good. This movie is not good. I mean, there's a lot that's just really bad about it. And there are, I mean, to what LaTanya said, I think there's stuff that I like. I think if we're going to talk about the like stuff, I don't know if this is in any of our takes, but the pod racing, I legit enjoyed watching it this time too. Like, I remember liking it when I first saw it. I remember people like being like, ooh, pod racing. And then watching it now, I'm like, you know what? The pod racing is kind of fun. Pod racing is kind of cool. So that I was into. But beyond that, there's very little things this movie has going for it. And there's a lot of problems, to say the least.
Yeah.
And beyond just the Star Wars stuff, I think this movie is bad for what it did to Star Wars, but also just, just from a, you know, my nerd writing soapbox level, this is bad. This is not good. This is a not well put together film on many levels.
You know, I didn't do like the Red Letter Media deep dive into everything wrong with Phantom Menace.
Red Letter Media, by the way. I watched those things so many times.
That, you know, I've seen it before. I haven't seen it in a long time. Like, I haven't done like a lot of the watches of like the takedowns of this movie, but
they're legendary. The Red Letter Archive is what it's called.
What's that?
The Red Letter,
Red Letter Media. I don't know. Is Red Letter Media still active, Kevin? Is it something?
I'm not sure. I feel like I haven't seen anything of his in a very long time. Yeah. He was a YouTuber who did a really deep dive breakdown analysis. It's very weird. He has very strange parts of it where he pretends to be a serial killer and have people in his basement. But his actual breakdown of the movie is really, really smart, really clever. And really well done. He also does it for Star Trek.
Red Letter Media rooting for the Packers as of January 16th. So at least a still active Twitter channel.
He also did the Star Trek movies, which I really enjoyed watching his analysis of those.
But, I mean, this was like, if not like early internet stuff, then it was like late college, early adult type internet stuff for me. So like I remembered watching that and that being like my first real exposure of like, yeah, I know, I gotta concede it sucks. Like I can still love a thing. You can still love a thing that sucks. It's possible. You know, there's several family members that you probably still love, even though they like objectively suck. That's a thing. I kind of feel that way about Phantom Menace still. So like, I'm not going to be upset, I don't think, if you're like, this piece of the Phantom Menace is garbage, because I'll probably agree until we get to Duel of the Fates, in which case I'll fight you with lightsabers out. So here's what I want to do. I want to go through some takes through the movie, and we'll go back and forth. We'll go LaTanya. We'll talk through a LaTanya point. We'll go Kevin. We'll talk through a Kevin point. And back and forth and so on and so forth until we've talked through our takes. And then if there's any, like, I was going to call them lightning rod takes that we want to do, but there's like a force lightning rod.
There it is.
Right?
There
I'm not frozen. I'm still here. You know, my hands were just like kind of like held up in like Palpatine pose. I don't know if you want to screenshot it. My hands are kind of, I can't do it. So. One of you would have to forget it. Anyway,
screenshot
unlimited,
unlimited power.
That's for the future. We're not there yet.
We're not there yet. We're getting there. LaTanya, why don't you kick us off? Take number one on the Phantom Menace from one LaTanya Starks.
Okay, take number one. Anakin is a Mary Sue.
Okay. We should probably get like the Mary Sue definition on the board for those who do not know.
For that.
Yep.
So according to Jackie Mansky of the Smithsonian Magazine, a Mary Sue, which is a character that was originally introduced in 1973 by Smith in the second issue of Menagerie, articulated a particular trope that exists far beyond, obviously, like Star Wars or any other universe. Mary Sue's can be found throughout the history of literature, standing on the shoulders of earlier fill-in characters like Pollyanna or the children's books of the 1910, also seen in Manic Pixie Dream Girl. So essentially, a Mary Sue is a character who can, who is great at everything immediately without having done much work in order to accomplish that. And everyone just kind of accepts it and goes along with it, and no one says anything about it. Ray, for example, in the most recent trilogies with Strigoi, was often referred to as a Mary Sue character because of her kind of innate abilities to do things. This is an 8-year-old child who competes in pod races that kill people. Can put together, like, I had no idea that Anakin as a child built C-3PO. I did not know that that was the case.
Yeah, it's a regrettable development.
Neither did we until we watched this movie, and we were like, or was
Is it C-3PO? It's not R2, right? It's C-3PO.
Yeah, C-3PO. Yeah. Yep.
So, like, essentially created sentient life in the form of a droid at 8. Can fly a plane, like a ship, can just pilot a ship with absolutely no issues. And no one ever said anything about it because he's strong with the Force and he's got the largest M count that anyone has ever seen in the history of time. But immediately when a character like Rey could do many of the same things, even though it was established what her training was and how she put together things and she wasn't 8, she was called a Mary Sue. So in my humble opinion, I think as much as I love Jake Lloyd in this performance, he's a delight. Anakin, the character, is a Mary Sue.
So, this is really interesting. Mary Sue is a term I'm very familiar with, in my youth, especially, because I think a key part of Mary Sue-ism is for the history of it is that it actually developed in fan fiction. Mary Sue was the name of a character created by the author that people was the name of the character in the story, and people coined it as author self-insertion because this character was it was a Star Trek fan fiction, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. It's
a person who is not only like good at everything. It's also a person that everyone like is instantly in love with. And this is a trope in fan fiction, especially. People love creating these characters that are the best at everything. And the character that they always loved as a fan is going to now love them in the story. And I think that was such a key part of what a Mary Sue and by extension, what became a Gary Stu for the male version of it. It was like this idea of like the author self-insertion and specifically from a fan perspective. And now it's become an attack phrase in a way. And it's so weird because like, I don't disagree with the idea that Anakin by its definition is in this movie specifically, I guess, is a Mary Sue type character. But my big disagreement is that I hate the usage of that term these days because the usage of the term has warped into something that it wasn't originally, you know?
Right.
And like, you can't control how words change and the meaning of words change. So like, that's just my own personal thing. Like how people use that is how it's being used in the context. So it does apply. But I feel like the usage of when people are just like, oh, this character is a Mary Sue, like Rey's a Mary Sue and Anakin's a Mary Sue. I'm like, I mean, I guess in the modern context, yeah, but like technically no, none of them are Mary Sues.
Yes.
Like,
it's immediately a derogatory term these days, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason that I used it was very pointed because I wanted to be able to refer to a strong male character, or in this case, a child.
I'm under attack.
Yeah. as you know, what Rey was hit with so much, and other characters have been hit with so much, and in reading the history of the term and learning more about it, it's odd how it is, you know, warped, as Kevin was saying, something that is immediately like a derogatory thing to call a character. Right. And really, what we're looking at here is just someone who is written in a way that depicts unrealistically their abilities, and they seem to lack any flaws or weaknesses. So in my humble opinion, this is an attack on the writing and not so much like the character in and of itself.
Yeah. And it's, so it's interesting, right? Cause like, I do think for Anakin, especially, and for Rey, like they get classified as this. And I think it's faulty to a certainty. And I think to your point, LaTanya, the attack on these characters for this, especially, let's face it, it's the sexism, right? Nobody called Anakin a Mary Sue originally. Nobody called Luke a Mary Sue originally. They attacked Rey because of sexist, you know, ideologies where they literally are all the same. I mean, in this movie, they quote the fact that Anakin is able to pod race and Anakin is able to pilot intuitively because of his abilities with the Force. People talk about, well, how can Rey do that? Guess what? A-hole is the same effing reason. Yeah. Like, that's why. Like, would they have established she's very attuned with the Force? She can do that.
So, like, either you're out on that concept or dot, dot, dot.
Exactly. So I think, you know, this is definitely a point on the fandom, but like, it's so wild because to me, and like, I think there is a problem with Mary Sue characters. Bella from Twilight is a Mary Sue because it is by the definition is an author self insertion and the way that character is written and
Kevin loves and Twilight.
You any never cease to any amaze opportunity. Me. Never cease to it. Amaze me with like the movies that you love.
This dude loves Twilight. No one loves Twilight the way that Kevin loves Twilight.
I love to hate
yes,
Twilight
you do. Stop
except for
it.
The last movie
Twilight.
Which I legit love.
He
just
loves
take
it.
A stand
loves
and go with it, Kevin. It's cool.
Yeah, you're in the same space. It's just three of us. Yeah.
But
we're not releasing this podcast, so you're good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just one of those things where
it's just for the archives, personal collection.
I do think Anakin, I do think Rey, and I do think Luke, they do have faults, right? But like people latch onto this weird thing about like because it is an attack against Rey. Rey has no faults. I'm like, what movie are you all watching? Like, I think all three of these characters have faults. That's the whole point of a lot of their journey is that they have faults and have to overcome a lot.
The only other thing that I would add to this is like people really, I think, did not care for Anakin. And I think like that tracks through the whole prequels. And I know that like one of the big strong takes that's coming from like the people who are really deep and versed in Clone Wars is like Clone Wars rehabilitates Anakin. Clone Wars, like he freaking shows up and like they do the character justice and all of that. But like whether it's Jake Lloyd, who, you know, was eviscerated by the fandom to a deeply tragic degree, or Hayden Christensen, who was loathed. I do think just like to put it out there, just like to talk that part through is like people really did not care for this character. And I wonder, you know, is it just cause like this kid's supposed to be Darth Vader? So like you're never going to live up to that or what? I don't really know, but,
what are you expecting for him to be like little emo vampire kid?
I don't think that there's a win. It's hard to win with this, you know, other than you give the story an overhaul, you know, you just do the whole thing different, maybe is the answer.
And I know that'll,
you know, I think that is it though. Right. Yeah. Like, and I'm not even talking because like, I think the dislike for Anakin doesn't necessarily fully stem from here. I think some of the dislike is, I mean, he's a kid, so it's hard to be like, oh yeah, this is the big and bad Darth Vader. And it's like, well, yeah, not yet. He's a kid. I think the problems is where you get to Clone Wars. Yeah, and Revenge of the Sith, right? Like that's the problem, and that you can attribute to definitely the writing. They could have fixed this a million and one ways, but which I guess leads into, I guess, take number one for me if we want to switch
over. Let's do it. Yes, right, exactly how it's supposed to go.
Because the writing, like, it's not. There's so much here that people have talked about. Like George Lucas is a bad director. He's a bad writer. I think he's bad at everything. Like, I think he's.
Is this the take?
This is the take.
Is like the bold underline headline, George Lucas is bad at everything?
There's one thing I think George Lucas is good at, and I think it's coming up with ideas. I think he's a very good idea person. It's not nothing. But the person who comes up with the ideas should also then not direct it, not write it, not edit it. Like, there's so much in this movie that I think is laid at the feet, in my opinion, to George Lucas and his inability to do any of that stuff. I mean, the writing, the dialogue, the dialogue in this movie is so bad. And this isn't even the worst. We get worse
dialogue
in 2 and 3.
What about the dialogue, though?
The dialogue.
Is the dialogue okay? I missed it when I was watching.
It's terrible. It's so bad. And that comes into the writing, right? Like, you can have an actor who can maybe then take some bad dialogue and deliver it the best that they can. You have some actors who are able to do that, who often excel a piece of writing through the acting. But a lot of that is then perpetuated and needed from a good director. And unfortunately, these actors aren't going to get that here, because I think he doesn't direct them. Or if he did direct him, what was he telling these people? Every scene in this movie, every scene and every word of dialogue is people just either sitting rod straight in their seats or walking with their arms in front of them or behind them, just slowly, slowly walking. I've never seen people walk so slow, and talking and just speaking words without emoting, without having any
Anakin.
Sort of... Yeah. Like, he doesn't even, like, it's not even done in such a way. Like, it's...
Remember, like, your training.
He gets better later, like, certainly Ewan McGregor. But, like, nobody is emoting. Nobody is doing anything.
What
Everyone
about
is sitting
the negotiations?
So still.
We've lost all communications.
It's bad. The only characters that actually have emotion in their voices most of the time are the cartoon characters. And the racist characters. It's wild. And that's because, like, by virtue of it's true. Like, it's crazy because, like, to me, the other part just comes into the directing thing. Even if you're not able to tell your actors, like, a walk and talk is fine. Literally, Aaron Sorkin's entire career is walk and talk, but he's able to do it because the camera is moving. You have dynamic movements. When an actor is in a scene, to do something with your hands! Like, just do something! Like, it's go crazy to be shooting this and sitting in the director's chair and just be like, this looks fine. They look like humans, right? This is what a human is? George Lucas might not be human is actually my real take, because nobody in this movie, I think, acts like a human being. They're all just monotone. And nobody used their hands for anything. They don't move at any sort of speed. It's wild. It is wild how much they just, like, I even in the backgrounds, they don't read, like, okay, sorry, I'm on a full rant here, but
go for it, Kevin. That's why we pay you.
I'm getting paid. Two scenes to call out. I noticed that when I had to rewind it, when they're underwater in the Gungan city and they're leaving in the little ship and they're just driving, boop, ba-doop, ba-doop, the lights go off, the power shuts down, and they turn it back on, and the lights pop up, and there's a giant monster outside, just like, rah! And Jar Jar, once again, the cartoon character, just like, blah! Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, nothing. Nothing. They, like, something just popped, and you could be like, well, they're stoic Jedi. And it's just like, what are you talking about? Like, it's crazy, that zero
there's always
reaction.
There's a bigger fish.
And, like, just not even that scene, this is later.
He does it twice. Scene, but, like, it escalates the frustration. Yeah. When there's a giant, like, fish getting your ship, and then another more giant one behind you, and you have the only person or character in the whole movie acting like this is actually scary, is Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah. Yep. And he's not even really there.
No, and that's the thing. I guess because when the CG people are able to animate it, they'll add their flourishes or whatever, so you don't have Lucas doing most of that, maybe. But then you also have, like, beyond that, the background characters. Background actors in this, I can't even imagine. Like, it's like the stuff was happening in front of them, and they're just standing there, like, stone face, nothing, while stuff is happening. And I can't, like, can you imagine them asking, like, what should we do in the scene? Just stand there. That's it? Yeah, just stand. Okay. Should we react to, like, the conversation or the shooting? No.
Nah.
Okay. Like, that's what this is. It's wild to me. And then so we got the writing, we got bad directing, and we come to bad storyteller. He doesn't know how to tell a story. The story is not being told. The story is being the story is quite literally, I guess, just being told to us through exposition and dialogue, through just watching things in a way that isn't dynamic or interesting. He doesn't know how to tell the story. I think he's able to come up with the idea for the story. I think he's able to come up with, like, the big picture stuff. And, like, when you have a guy like that, that's great. You need that sometimes. You need the guy who can get the stuff back on the rails. When he does all of it and he's not good at any of it, we end up with The Phantom Menace. And
Kevin.
Hashtag end rant.
Wow.
I've got some things to say about that too. George Lucas, what a complicated character. Because, like, it's true. Because
everyone be careful. Without George Lucas, we don't get Star Wars. And without George Lucas, he's a legendary winner of a Survivor Brant Steele. Dunn and Rob has a podcast. So we just want to tread lightly.
Yeah, let's not upset the RHAP patron.
I don't think anyone's going to be that upset. Famous last words, by the way. Everyone's going to be furious.
Yeah. Josh is right. You know, without him, there would be no, wars in the stars. So there's that. There's also just kind of he's a visionary in many ways, but not maybe a writer or a director. How I like to think of George Lucas. But there are some times where he just makes some calls that are baffling. Like, if you see any of the footage surrounding the prequels, he's just like, he says, and I believe this is a direct quote, Jar Jar is going to change everything. It's like,
I guess he is not wrong.
Yeah.
He certainly changed my emotions and feelings about things.
And it's just like, what world were you living in, even though it wasn't 2021, allegedly, because God knows how long this year has been going on. He was just like, yes, you know what would be a great idea? A CGI clumsy character that is a stereotype of something racist. Let's go. And then he just like put an actor in there, Ahmed Best, to do Ahmed's best. And I think that he gave it his all, but then Jar Jar sucks. Like, the character is not written well. It's very demeaning and damaging and racist tropes behind it. And he thought that this was going to be a game changing, like, people will forever love this character.
Yeah. A lot of like the success of the prequel trilogy was like pinned on the idea that Jar Jar was really going to take off.
Exactly.
I mean,
that was his idea.
There's the fan theory that I do kind of love, right? About like Jar Jar was secretly going to be the real Phantom Menace, and like he's actually like the whole. If you guys don't know this, you need to go on Reddit and you need to look it up, because if this was the case, holy!
Do you have any of that front of mind ready to go?
So what it was is basically the revelation that Jar Jar Binks was just putting on this facade as being clumsy, because a lot of the movements he made and a lot of things he made obviously played out really well and helped in the long run. But the way he ends up from one scene to the next, the way he's able to jump and move, little things that he does, it's kind of like, huh. Later on, the theory is this would have been revealed that he is a Sith and he is the Phantom Menace. He is the dark leader behind a lot of this stuff, and he was faking it and using his force abilities to ingratiate himself into this group of people, and would have been essentially a contrast to Yoda as the surprise Jedi Master, the surprise Sith Master being this guy. And then the idea is like maybe that turned after people were not pleased with Jar Jar as a character after the first one. If they had committed to that, and if it's real and they had done that, oh my God, I think my views on the prequel would have been real different.
Darth Jar Jar is a really great theory. I love it so much. And if you look, I've got limited experience again with the Clone Wars and even the prequels. I still have to watch the next two before ahead of these podcasts that we're doing. But if you look in the prequels, there are certain episodes where Jar Jar is like fully distracting people by doing things like juggling plates and saucers and not dropping anything at all. Like, complete coordination, hand-eye, everything. So for him to emerge from this movie and change to that really kind of enforces the maybe this was all a joke, and it gets us back to the side of being like, Ahmed Best is actually a genius and was playing this character in this way just to subvert all of these expectations later and turn out to be evil. That's kind of cool, and getting one up on the man.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
It's such a weird character.
I love the Darth Jar Jar idea.
Right? It would have been so cool, because like right now, this character
the Binks
also
Lord. Like, I would have been so here for it.
But right now, he doesn't fit in this movie in a very weird way, because the movie takes itself so seriously.
And they know that, right? Because in the next two, and I guess it's a spoiler for you, LaTanya, in terms of what to expect, but they dramatically reduce the amount of Jar Jar to the point that he is hardly in Revenge of the Sith.
I think he's in a scene.
He's at a funeral. Maybe another scene beyond that. I don't remember which one is when you can suddenly start put a lot of the galactic strife on Jar Jar.
I think it's the third one. Yeah. But it's so weird because his over the top cartoonishness doesn't fit into the world that we're seeing here. And again, I think it's does George Lucas not understand human beings? Where he's trying to be children will like this, adults will like this, and it's just adults are not going to like any of this, and kids maybe might like that, but why are they in this movie? There's nothing else in this movie they're going to be paying attention to. But it's so crazy because, as I said, Jar Jar is one of three very racist characters in this. It's one thing. I feel one is a mistake. Three is a problem.
They say three is a trend.
I say that about children all the time.
LaTanya, that's the best thing I've ever heard.
Savage.
If Robin is listening to this, I'm sorry in terms of your sister, because she has three kids. But
that'll be fine.
It's weird, right?
Because you have him,
you have the Trade Federation, which that is some racist voice work right there. And then of course you have Watto, who is another just very racist character, and you're just what is happening here? Who? And I guess again, this has to go in the feet of George Lucas, because he's the one in charge of giving approval over all of this. So one has to really wonder: are you human? Is there a real person in there? Are you from a galaxy long time ago, far, far away, and you're just trying to adapt to human beings now? Anyway, that ends Kevin's entire thing here, I think.
Yeah, I think he's just too rich, you know? You know how rich people, mega rich people, they do the weirdest things?
Yeah, they're just disconnected.
He's got this creative outlet to make all of his dreams come true, his weird dream.
No one to say no.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Everybody needs someone to tell them to stop.
Yeah.
To everybody.
Edit. Everyone needs an editor.
You need an editor. You need someone who's gonna be like, I love where you're coming from, but no, and here's why. Everyone needs that, because no one is infallible. Everyone makes mistakes. And so the writer, producer, director, triumvirate is a dangerous entity.
We see it.
It works out. There are people who can do that. I think they're fairly few and far between who can really do that.
Yeah. It's hard for us to find one.
LaTanya, you said something great, the idea of the visionary. You're a visionary, but you're not a writer. You're not a director. Look at Kevin Feige. This dude isn't writing and directing stuff. Ideas. And then counting on and investing in and working with professionals who are writers and directors.
And bring your vision to life in a way that is coherent and...
Because your thing's never going to come. It's not going to come out the way you want it to, because you're going to be so effing tired. I think that there's a lot. I have empathy for George Lucas in the way that I have empathy for, I don't know. There's an element of burnout that has to be in play. You're trying to do all. You cannot do all of this. No. Someone had to say no.
We probably fired those people a long time ago.
Yeah, there's no one to say no. Yeah. And anyone who did. Later.
This is also his first movie I think he was doing in 22 years. So it's also coming out of retirement. It's also coming out of not doing anything for 22 years and then being I will do it all. And it's just George, I don't think you can. I'm rich. I can do anything. Real Scrooge McDuck energy just coming out.
I love it. All right. So that's the writing. So that's point number one from Kevin. LaTanya, let's toss it back to you. Where do you want to take this next?
Okay. Now, I've been giving this one some thought, so I'm not really sure
where we're going to go.
Where we're going to go.
Well, let's go on an adventure.
Okay.
Let's bring our ship down to Tatooine and we'll figure out how to get the parts.
Okay.
We may have to improvise.
I'm trying to figure out how I want to order these because I don't want my third one to be taken by cancer.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I'll leave the third one for last because it's the best one. So the second one is that the Phantom Menace has the coolest droids in the Star Wars universe.
Okay.
Interesting.
So some battle droids. The canonical beginning introduction of R2-D2 and C-3PO. We've got Droidica. Those pit droids are pretty cool. I can't lie. I like the little clicky-clacky ones that say Roger, Roger all the time.
Roger, Roger.
And they have like little, their feet sound like horse hooves. So It was kind of cool, like, you know, because everything in these in Star Wars movies sounds great. Like, you know, the sound mixing is done well and the music and orchestration are just like phenomenal, which I know we'll talk about. But I really like the droids in this movie. And I'm wondering what you all think about that.
So it's complicated because I think separated from Star Wars that we know, the droids and the stuff that are in this movie could have been cool. I think the problem is within the context of the world that we were presented, which takes place in the future from this film, doesn't make sense. And I think this is a bigger issue to me with just the usage of CGI in these films and in a lot of films. Like, this is going to be a weird take overall, and this isn't to this movie, but just all movies. All movies should be like at max 30% CGI. That's it. I think practical effects help keep a movie like relevant for longer. It like CG has dates movies really badly, and this is a good example for that. Things just don't look right. And, you know, as human beings, the uncanny valley exists because we are literally instinctually built to recognize things that are close to real, but not. So we're able to be like, that's not real. And there's something about this film, though, when you see it from the droids, if you compare the Roger Rogers, I think, are close. But if you compare some of the other vehicles, compare some of the other the Rolly droids and stuff like that, there's something just really off and a little bit too far flung future compared to like your C-3POs and your R2-D2s and some of the other droids we end up seeing. And so, like, for me, that's where the bump happens. I just feel like this none of the stuff in this movie feels lived in. None of the technology and the CG feels lived in. It all feels too sleek, too new, too like just shiny, right? Like, there's something about the original and even the sequel trilogy that all the technology feels rugged and rough and lived in and real. There's something tangible about it. And I think we lose that here. And I think the designs of the droids are cool. I think those droids could have been really cool if we didn't have what we already know exists, I guess. Is the best way to put it. That's where I bump against. But otherwise, like, I do think the droids and stuff could have been really awesome. But I bump against the fact that I'm just like, why you look so shiny and new? Did someone just take you out of your packaging? Like, you know?
Yeah. Like, but I like
you lost your value,
like
value
that,
out of that
actually.
Packaging.
I like the shiny and new quality. I know, I agree with you that the CGI in this movie and the beginning of the CGI, and even though I've not seen these movies, I still live in the world and I've listened to Star Wars podcasts because that's, I'm me. I do everything backwards. But yes, the CGI in this movie.
Motto of the
Posha
Recaps Discord.
Yeah, I do everything backwards. Very, very dated almost immediately. And they have some characters who are CGI characters like Yoda, who just should not ever be CGI.
Yeah, like, and they changed that. You know, in the theatrical, He's a puppet in Phantom Menace, and then George is like, you know, we gotta turn that into a computer.
Oh, they changed it?
Yes, in the theatrical, in the original release, it's a puppet. It is a puppet. And then, you know, it's Frank Oz puppetry show. And then one of the classic, like, let's go, we have to go backs. George Lucas turned him into a CGI monster.
Because he wants to turn everything into a robot like himself.
There we go. Yeah. I like the shiny quality, I think, because I like cars. I like vintage cars. And I love to see them all. Like, I love some shiny chrome. So it's that, I think, that I was just like, ooh, look, a distraction from this very long Like, I was texting Kevin during this movie and basically being like, when will my perdition end?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So I getting to see something I hadn't seen before in the Star Wars universe that was like shiny and new, I think made me really fall for these droids, even if most of them were murder droids.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah.
It's really funny you mentioned the length, because this movie does feel so long. And I think it's because, like, again, to go into the storytelling element, not
I
a
watched
lot
this live in the Discord.
Yeah. Did you, that was, why? Wait, what? Why?
And I'm going to do it again for Attack of the Clones. Just, I'm committed to the bit.
You're
just
committed.
But they are long to sit through in a single shot right now. How did I do it 10 times as a kid?
It's because as a kid, I guess. I don't know. You're just shiny, you know?
You're so, exactly. Yeah. You're excited just to, like, be able to go to the movies with your friends. So,
and
like,
also, like, a certain extent of that is, like, my friends and I would, like, leave the theater and we would, like, hang out in the hallway and we would talk and be like, all right, we would probably, like, Duel of the Fates is coming on in a few minutes. Like, there was definitely a lot of that energy happening.
We used
for
to
sure.
go to TGI Fridays, which was, like, across the street, and then just sit at a booth and talk about the movie and nerd crap for, like, a while.
Yeah.
They got those half apps at TGI Fridays. Anyway.
That's one of the best parts of movie going when you are young and like, old enough at first to do it on your own. It's like, having friends with you and getting to go discuss stuff. So that's how we build these like memories and get this nostalgia for things.
And now we can't even go anywhere. So.
Okay. You know, we're already talking about Phantom Menace. You don't have to bring it down any further. We all know.
But I think the length is there because like there's just not a lot that happens, right? Like this movie has like very few actual beats that occur. There was a point that, like, because I remember what happens in the film plot-wise, right? I was like, this happens. But then they get, like, the beginning happens and they land on Tatooine, and I'm just like, what? There's still, like, an hour and 45 minutes? Like, what the hell? What's the rest of this movie? Because there's not a lot that happens. So you're just there, like, what? Oh my God, it's still going. They're still happening. And there's, again, the slow walking, the slow talking, the slow pace makes it
the
feel
slowest,
slow.
The slowest grappling clip you have ever seen. Like when they all just ascend up the building, it's so slow.
Everything is slow in this, except again, like let's transition away. Transition. Woo. Except for one part is not slow. One part isn't slow. One part is pretty fast, and it's going to be my take that I know Josh is not looking forward to. This is sort of a
is this take two
thing.
Official?
This is take two official.
Take
it's
two.
It's a bit of encompassing. And it's that Darth Maul sucks, and that ending lightsaber battle is not cool.
I hate you.
I know. I mean,
this is me in the lava looking up at you. I hate you.
Okay, here's the thing, right? Like, and I know, Josh, you have rebuttal. That's fine. The Darth Maul part of it. It's one, and I don't know, maybe it's me, and I understand he looks cool, but literally that's it. I think the amount of like fan fervor and fan excitement, it reminded me a lot of the Boba Fett stuff that I talked about in our previous podcast, where people really loved Boba Fett after the actual movies, and I'm just like, but why? He's there for like 2 seconds. Like, yeah, he looks cool. Is that it? And it is kind of it. And I can get that, right? Like, look, it's like speaking of Natalie Portman, it's like Jane Foster and Thor. If you want to tell me those two people are just horny for each other, cool, I get it. But when you're just like, oh, they have a deep bonding and love, I'm like, that's crazy talk. Like, you can be like, Darth Maul has an awesome design. He has a dual-bladed lightsaber. That's cool. But if you're just like, Darth Maul is the best, I'm like, that's wild. And like, then you're just like, oh, but the lightsaber battle at the end, right? And I'm like, as a kid, Yeah, as a kid, I thought it was cool because as a kid, I also am like flashy lights and flippy kicky. But as an adult who's also now like really paying attention, especially as we've talked about in the MCU stuff, like fight scenes and what makes a good final battle, none of that is really present here. None of that is evident in this lightsaber battle. You have a battle that means nothing because there's no emotional stakes and there's no investment. They're fighting against a character we know nothing about, who's had two speaking lines the entire movie, and who only is just like, well, I'm a threat because I have two lightsabers on my sword. And you're just like, well, okay, that's pretty cool. So there's no emotional investment. We don't know enough about Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan's relationship that when Qui-Gon dies, we should really care as much as we should. There's a weird environment. That's the other thing. The environment should play a part, but this is, and they had beats that wanted to happen, so they invented an environment for it. It's like in Galaxy Quest, which I love that movie, where they talk about the smashy things, and it's just like, why is this even here? Like, the same thing with those, like, little red doors to close. Like, why is that here? Like, it's just, it's there for no reason to invent things to happen in this fight scene. And the last part of it, that I want to talk about is that this battle, the fighting is just like flippy kickies that have nothing to do with anything, and then they'll swing their sword. So much is just flourishing that is just visually supposed to be like, okay, things are moving, but nothing's happening. And like, I was talking about it after watching this at home, that if I compare this quote-unquote great lightsaber battle to the moment that we anticipated spoilers for Mandalorian. Spoilers for Mandalorian Season 2. If you haven't seen
Season
Mandalorian 2,
the Mandalorian
2,
spoilers. Be careful. We're in trouble. Get out of here. There's danger. Great danger ahead.
Great danger.
There's a little more danger. I'm still saying a little more danger. Skip ahead.
Roger.
Roger.
All right, you're clear.
I'm not even going to talk about the Episode 5 one. I'm not going to talk about the cool lightsaber. Like, they're both cool, but like that one. When they built up a moment where your characters are watching on a screen, and someone in a hood shows up that we think we know who it is, but we don't know for sure. And they're just walking with the lightsaber, catching stuff with the Force, swiping at them, not backflipping all over the place. That moment is so much cooler and so much more exciting and so much more dynamic and interesting than what we saw in this movie. That is a cool lightsaber battle. That is a cool moment with emotional investment that we're caring about. And he's not even, again, doing all that stuff. In the new sequel stuff and in the original trilogy, it's not about the flipping and the kicking. Like, the emotional investment in Return of the Jedi and that lightsaber battle is awesome because there's something more to it than just, oh, look, we're flourishing. To quote June Diane Raphael from How Did This Get Made, just because something looks difficult doesn't mean it's good. And that is what this is.
Oh, my God. I hate you so much.
Oh, wow.
My initial reaction is I hate Kevin. And I don't want to be his friend anymore. Well, Tiny, you want to take the floor? Because sure. Then I'll do a thing.
Sure. Because I don't want to be here for the end of a friendship. Okay. We'll be able to repair this one.
We'll be okay.
First of all, I have a question. If this part of the movie doesn't get you going, what part does? Like, what's your favorite part of this movie then?
Probably the pod racing scene.
Okay. I'll allow it.
If we're talking about scenes in specific, it's that.
Yeah, I'll allow it. Also, I'm going to
hold music was good, sorry. The music was very good. Duel of the Fates, the actual song, is awesome. And I think it helped a lot.
The music is amazing. The music, yeah. It, in and of itself, is not just really cool. It's iconic. It's like one of the pieces of score from all of the Star Wars, everything. That people immediately point to and love.
And I agree with that.
It's fantastic.
That song makes things look awesome.
Well, not even makes things look awesome, but that in and of itself lends tension and stakes to a fight that I think is really cool. I think that I don't know exactly where they are or what environment they are in when they are having this fight, nor do I know
farming,
why.
Plasma, I believe.
Got it. Nor do I understand why no building in Star Wars has any railings or guards in any place.
They really should build those.
That's,
I think,
fine.
That people have like sturdier bones in the Star Wars movies.
From all the flips that they do, they have
their bones are pretty good. Their bones are pretty good. Yeah.
Kevin Flippy Kiki Mahadejo.
Yes.
Like, I honestly, the battle does mean something because it means something to a character that we are going to come to know and love. And that is Obi-Wan. That was Obi-Wan's master. And we experience kind of like the pain of it through him. I think that the advice, like the device of slowing the fight down by having those barriers come up out of nowhere and making it impossible for Obi-Wan to like intervene at any time, Qui-Gon sitting there and just kind of quietly trying to like get all of the force power that he possibly can because he realizes he's fighting Ray Park. Ray Park's right. Amazing.
Yeah.
If there's ever going to be a person who has like a dual-sided saber, which is essentially just like a staff, to do a fight scene and do flippy kickies, you want it to be Ray Park. And hell yeah, he looks cool. It's one of the reasons why I'm always so conflicted about anyone who's on the dark side in Star Wars, because they get black and red and those colors are just cool.
Yes.
They just look better than all of like the tinges of blue that we get. He's gone out of the way to get like Rorschach blots like put on his face. Like he's all that is like tattoos. That's like dedication to the dark side. And then we see him in kind of all of his glory take out the one Jedi that we got to spend any significant time with. And I'm not saying that anyone built a rapport with anyone in this movie, because most of the time they were alone shooting in front of a green screen.
Right. And they're cardboard cutouts that they dubbed in their voices for.
Right. And that in and of itself, you're right, takes away some of the emotional investment. But the weird environment lends to how cool the fighting is and just how intricate you have to be in those moves. Obviously the music, which everyone can agree with. And then the battle itself, I have no problem with a lot of flippy kicking other than the actual pod race scene. And I guess kind of like the scene where everyone is banding together to like, beat someone. This is the best scene in the film.
Yes, for sure. Not even close. Really not even close. I want to, I just want to like co-sign everything Latanya just said. I'm just like fully on board with literally everything Latanya just said. But I've talked a lot about Duel of the Fates already last week. Next week we've got feedback show coming up. I want to bring something in. It's going to be a long clip. Kevin, this is going to be, Dave Filoni, mm-hmm. who did like a round table for,
Ever heard of him?
Yeah, Dave Filoni, who is, George Lucas.
I don't
Luke.
Just worship a person and believe everything they say is correct at all times. I believe that people can be incorrect about things.
That's fine. Give it a second, Kevin. All right. You had your turn. Then Latanya spoke, and I'm giving my time to Dave Filoni. Dave Filoni gets my time. And I want to shout out the great Rich Filiberto, the wonderful dungeon master himself, our Philly, who brought this to my attention. And he had watched this, and it was from the Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian, from, I believe last season, from season one, that is. And it's a conversation with Dave Filoni, who was like the Obi-Wan to George Lucas's Qui-Gon, right? You know, this is a guy who's, very chiefly responsible for what many people would consider some of the absolute best Star Wars stories. And he has it's a relatively long, it's about a 6-minute clip that we're going to sit and listen to. And he's going to talk through why Duel of the Fates matters thematically. So this is less about like the kicky flippy stuff. If you don't like the kicky flippy stuff, I don't think that there's much that I can do for you. But I think at least in terms of like how it fits alongside the greater arc of Star Wars, I at the very least think his points about Duel of the Fates very specifically are worth listening to. And this would be the time to do it. So I concede my time to Dave Filoni. Let's listen in.
Prequels, I thought, were almost an impossible task. How do you tell the story that we've all grown up with imagining who Anakin Skywalker was? You saw so many things in Phantom Menace that you just imagined, like the Jedi Council, and none of it really was what I had expected. But I know now that that's just like how creative George is. Like he just sees it differently, and he's laying it down. And I love the lightsaber fight with Darth Maul, not because it's a lightsaber fight, but because George is so good at crafting why that fight's important every time. Like, you know, the Obi-Wan Darth Vader fight isn't like the most wonderfully staged necessarily combat that you're ever going to see, but there's so much at stake. It's so meaningful when Obi-Wan dies that we all feel like Luke. In Phantom Menace, you're watching these two Jedi in their prime fight this evil villain. Maul couldn't be more obviously the villain. He's designed to look evil. And he is evil, and he just expresses that from his face all the way out through the type of lightsaber he fights with. What's at stake is really how Anakin's going to turn out, because Qui-Gon is different than the rest of the Jedi, and you get that in the movie, and Qui-Gon is fighting because he knows he's the father that Anakin needs, because Qui-Gon hasn't given up on the fact that Jedi are supposed to actually care and love, and that that's not a bad thing. The rest of the Jedi are so detached, and they've become so political that they've really lost their way. Mm-hmm. And Yoda starts to see that in the second film. But Qui-Gon is ahead of them all, and that's why he's not part of the council. So he's fighting for Anakin, and that's why it's the duel of the fates. It's the fate of this child. And depending on how this fight goes, Anakin is gonna, his life is gonna be dramatically different. So Qui-Gon loses, of course.
No!
So the father figure, because he knew what it meant to take this kid away from his mother when he had an attachment, and he's left with Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan trains Anakin at first out of a promise he makes to Qui-Gon, not because he cares about him. When they get Anakin, when they find him on Tatooine, he says, why do I feel like we've found another useless life form? He's comparing Anakin to Jar Jar.
Excuse me.
And he's saying, this is a waste of our time. Why are we doing this? Why do you see importance in these creatures like Jar Jar Binks and this 10-year-old boy? This is useless. So he's a brother to Anakin eventually, but he's not a father figure. Mm. That's a failing for Anakin. He doesn't have the family that he needs. He loses his mother in the next film. He fails on this promise that he made to mother, I will come back and save you. So he's left completely vulnerable. And Star Wars ultimately is about family. So that moment in that movie, which a lot of people, I think, diminish into just, oh, it's just a cool lightsaber fight. But it's everything that the entire three films of the prequels hangs on, is that one particular fight. And Maul serves his purpose, and at that point died before George may bring him back. But he died. And that's showing you again how the Emperor is completely self-serving. He doesn't care. He's just a tool and he's using people. And now he's going to use this child. That follows all the way through to the line which terrified me as a kid when the Emperor tells Luke, you like your father are now mine. And the idea when I was a little kid watching that movie of some evil person possessing my father, making him do things or making him be evil was terrifying. That was like a thought that was horrible. Also, it's amazing when you watch Return of the Jedi that Luke has never done anything that I would call it, like, he's a bad character. He has like a tendency to be dark, and a lot of people wanted Anakin, oh, he should have been darker as a character. It's not true at all. I believed Luke would turn to the dark side in Return of the Jedi. I believe that was on the table. I believe that he would kill the Emperor. And because of the way George arranges the story, I knew that was the wrong thing to do. When he's saying, you know, you want your weapon, you know, strike me down, I am defenseless. He wants him to give into his anger. He wants him to give in his hate. And the fear, the structure that George has laid out in all the movies is coming to fruition now. And the only thing that's going to save him is not his connection to the Force. It's not the powers he's learned. It's not all these things that are an advantage to him. That's gotten him to the table. But what saves Luke is his ability to look at all that and look at his father and say, no, I'm going to throw away this weapon. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to let that go and be selfless. And he says, you know, I am a Jedi like my father before me. But what he's really saying, and why we connect, I connect so powerfully to it, is like he's saying, I love my father. And there's nothing you can do that's going to change that. And the Emperor can't understand that connection. Why wouldn't you take this? I'm offering you power of the galaxy. Why wouldn't you take this? And Anakin then in that moment has to decide to be the father that he's never had. He has to give up all the power of the galaxy and save his son. And that's the selfless act that he does in return for his son. And that's what saves him in turn. So the son said the father said the son. And it works out perfectly. And I draw that line all the way from Phantom Menace to Jedi. That's the story of Star Wars. Everything
so when he pops
else,
the helmet, you're saying when he pops the helmet off in that moment was part of the faded arc.
It's all part of the fate. It's all part of like why it works and why we care. It's not about X-Wings. It's not about all these, the things we decorate Star Wars in. It's important. It's part of the genius of it. But we soulfully react like, we don't just want an action movie. We want to feel uplifted. And Star Wars is an adventure that makes you feel good. You know, it makes me feel like, wow, I want to be a part of that. So that's what I always go back to with Star Wars, is this selfless act and this family dynamic, which is so important to George, so important to the foundation of Star Wars. That's in us. And what I like about it is it is really saying there is a lot of hope out there, that we fundamentally want to be good people, that we can all be driven to do terrible things, but that we can persevere through selfless action. So George has this hopeful story, and it's something that he's reiterated most times I've seen him, you know, after we've been making things without him, is remember to make these stories hopeful. Mm. Remember to give that to kids because they really need it. And so that's just something to keep in mind. Did I bring us down?
I think we're done.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So that is Dave Filoni's tracking Duel of the Fates to Luke versus Vader in Return of the Jedi.
So that is some great, awesome fan fiction he created in his head that he was able to then make into reality as a person who can then create the world of Star Wars. Because none of what he's talking about is presented or actually shown in the movie. He talks about George loving the symmetry, and George himself has been like, symmetry, because this scene looks like this scene. And that's George's idea of symmetry half the time. He has a surface level view of it. His idea of symmetry is that when Luke, and I was going to say this before we even saw it, so I'm glad it was in here. His idea of symmetry is that when Obi-Wan gets killed, Luke, you do a close-up shot and you have him go, no! And then you do the exact same goddamn shot for Obi-Wan Kenobi. The idea of Qui-Gon as a father figure is sort of insane. They barely interact with each other enough in that movie. Qui-Gon's drive to train Anakin is because he thinks he's going to fulfill the prophecy. He even says that like several times. When the Jedi, he goes to the Jedi Council, he's like, I'm going to go against them. I think they're wrong. In a way, they were right. They were absolutely right that they shouldn't train him. He's too old. His anger inside him and his fear is going to drive him toward bad things. None of the stuff that we have with Luke, the conversation he has with the Emperor, notice in the first three original, there's beats of dialogue. There's moments of things happening. All of that was then leading up to that battle where the characters are conversing or there's emotional stakes through their facial expressions or things that are happening. None of that happens here. The idea that that battle was somehow for the fate of Anakin is absolutely, after the fact, he's like, okay, I think this is what it is. And he got to make it and make it so. None of the stuff that followed after that tracks to that idea. So, like, I get it. Like, he's created this world, and also he's not going to crap talk George Lucas on a panel with everyone else. But, like, come on.
It's called Duel of the Fates. I get that we have, you know, three fighters there. We could be talking about their fates. But what if it's not? Like, it's Duel of the Fates. And whose fates are in danger here if Maul wins? Obviously the entire Jedi Order, but also Anakin.
But is it? Because the Emperor doesn't know at the time Anakin exists. He didn't send Maul there to get Anakin.
That doesn't matter, though.
For Dave Filoni's argument that this is a battle for Anakin to make sense, Emperor had to have wanted Anakin. He had to know Anakin existed to that point and needed Anakin to be taken by Maul. Or that something happens where Anakin will end up in his grasp. That is
reason
not
to think
in
that maybe
movie.
He knows, though, right? Because, you know, Palpatine does say to little Jake Lloyd, is like, we shall be watching your career with great interest towards the end of the movie. And also, he's got his fingers in all of these different pots as the person who's then going to be, like, groomed to take over the whole Senate and therefore become the Galactic Emperor, that you would think that it's not impossible that he has a line on what's going on in the Jedi Council.
Once he encounters him, and this is stuff that they do in the second one. And to the further point, too, of, like, I get what you're saying, LaTanya, where it's like, oh, Obi-Wan cares about this person. Now, again, they haven't shown it at all in this movie, in my opinion, like in a way that actually forms a bond between them or showing Obi-Wan. In fact, he argues with Qui-Gon more than anything else. But we're connected to Obi-Wan also at this point because there's so much that exists around that character that makes us connect to Obi-Wan. At the time, we had like barely any of him and then this movie. So like even as a character, we knew Obi-Wan through his connection to the previous films, but not enough in here about who he was as a younger self in order to develop this connection with Qui-Gon and as his master. Or even the Master Jedi like apprentice situation. We only get a little bit of that through Luke and Yoda, and even then there's not a lot of it. So I understand, like, I understand the points, but the idea that this was a bigger thing about Anakin, to me, that's not evidential here. The idea that Qui-Gon, I mean, maybe to an extent, Qui-Gon is fighting to beat the Sith, because that way he can then train Anakin, sure, and he's just like, hey, you gotta train this boy. Like, that's what I'm really caring about. Okay, we get that when he tells Obi-Wan. But in terms of, like, a battle for Anakin's soul through Palpatine, nah. Like, because even then, like, what was Qui-Gon going to, like, they don't know. What is Qui-Gon going to do afterwards? Even if they had gotten there, even if he had to train them, even events would have proceeded to an extent the way they were proceeding, because Palpatine had that plan. What was Qui-Gon going to do differently? Like, there's just so much in there that, like, I understand this would be cool if, and he was able then to shape a lot of that stuff through Clone Wars, through relationship building, through retroactive storytelling, because he then has the power to do that. Cool. We see it in comics all the time. We see retroactive continuity happen in comics nonstop. When you're a fan who grew up and you saw things one way and you get to write it, you get to change it, and you get to make your own world. And that's what happened there. But in the world and the evidence represented, none of that stuff is in this movie.
Yeah, but the kicky flippy stuff, Latanya, is super cool, huh?
Kicky flippy.
You know?
Kickity flippity.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. That was truly a rant for the ages.
I'm sorry, everyone.
No, don't apologize. Again, that is what we are here for.
Feel how you feel. Feel how you feel. I want you to just be authentic. I want you to tell me how you feel. And I'm sure that there are people yas queening you pretty hard right now.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people. Look, yeah, and look again. The lightsaber battle, for what it is, I think there's a lot of visual stunning stuff that happens, and I think the visual parts are kind of cool. Sure, but for me, in terms of an action scene, in terms of, like, again, what could have been like tighter choreography without the flips and kicks, I think I would have been way more into that, and I think it would have made for a little more dynamic story. Even again, or so some dialogue beats. I'm not saying you need that. That's not necessary, but it could have helped.
Yeah. All right. Well, we spent a lot of time on Duel of the Fates. We've established, Latanya, that Kevin is wrong. I think we can move on to your third and final take.
Okay. My third and final take, which is going to...
Kevin, I love you. I love you very much.
Everyone loves Kevin.
Yeah, I think that's, I love Kevin.
Not true at all.
Ooh, I love you. I love you very much.
You it's love so, and hate it, me. You say this all the time. This is the evidence of it right here.
I know. Your passion is like my favorite thing on the planet. So I love you in this moment, even if I don't agree.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Great. Just all around great.
Yes, yes.
So this is going to be a little antithetical to some of the things I just said.
But, it's my favorite kind of podcasting, LT.
If we're having a debate. Yeah. I don't have to say things I believe in, nor do I have to say things that are true. So, yes.
It's the power of debate.
Power of debate.
Yes.
So my third take is that Qui-Gon Jinn is the true Phantom Menace.
Okay, so before you continue, I need to shout out Tessa, aka Tesseract, in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord, who, like, I've been monitoring the Discord as we're podcasting. I've always got an eye on you all, just in case something breaks.
It is a Panopticon.
There's a lot going on, you know? And, Tessa saw that I was in a room, and Tessa said, I know you're recording Phantom Menace right now, and I know it's too late, but I just have to let you know that my big take is Qui-Gon Jinn's an asshole. And you know what, Tessa? You weren't too late. In fact,
too late.
Much like a hobbit, you arrived just in time.
I think that's a wizard, not a hobbit.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I'm sure they both arrived promptly.
Oh, it is a wizard that does it. And I just watch these movies. I should know that.
Yeah. If anything, a hobbit is late, because he's always just kind of like going at his own pace, eating a lot of breakfasts.
Yeah, so many breakfasts, at least 3.
11. Yeah. I did not see that in the Discord. I wrote this down yesterday.
Yes. No, this happened 20 minutes ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love it, though. Thank you, Tess. So, I've got one person who agrees with me here. Let me kind of lay out the case. Okay. So,
I think Rob agreed with you, too. In the recap, Rob was really not thrilled with Qui-Gon Jinn.
What is there to be thrilled about? I mean, I guess he's got great hair. Is that enough?
It's Liam Neeson's, I guess.
Well,
and his Tatooine sweater game is pretty good.
Sure.
Yeah.
To your point, Kevin, all I'll say is... Google Liam Neeson and Black Bastard. That's all I'll say.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Any one of you who wants to do that, go ahead. I'm not going to get into it because it's immediately apparent.
Yeah.
But anyway, he does nothing. Like, he is a Jedi Knight. And he ends up on Tatooine, which is a planet of slaves and slavery. And he's like, oh, these slaves. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Let me do nothing to help them. Let me just kind of participate in the culture and, you know, creep on Shmi, which is the second point, which is just like, stop being a creeper to Shmi and asking where the father is, right? It was probably pretty weird and traumatic that Shmi was suddenly pregnant and had basically gave a virgin birth.
Right.
Like Christian Monomyth. Alert here, but like, I'm sure that Shmi doesn't want to talk about it with some guy that, as Rob said, her kid just brought home one day, right? Yes. Also, he steals the blood of a child. Yeah. Like, what are you doing stealing the, even if you want to test it for M-count, stop, don't steal the blood of a child.
Yeah.
He does the whole, he's
very unorthodox, Qui-Gon Jinn.
He could have done way more during that negotiation with Watto, right? To make sure that both Shmi and Anakin could get away. But he just wanted Anakin and used the Force to make that happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, he chooses the child who becomes Darth Vader as the chosen. He does that. And the entire time he's just being dismissive and annoying. Toward Padme. Like, you know, go clean the droid, which she's happy to do, which is great. But like, her saying you assume too much and just like rolling her eyes all the time is exactly what I was doing for this character. I was just like, what? Why are you here? What are you doing here? Where is Ewan McGregor? Why did you just leave him on that ship for however long you're going to be here while you creep on this child's mom and go and watch a race that you encourage an 8-year-old to be in, even though he's an 8-year-old and people die in these races.
Yeah.
And you chose Darth Vader.
Yeah. You picked Vader. You picked him. Yeah. And I did this time really like the Qui-Gon Shmi stuff really bothered me where he was kind of just like, oh, really? That's really interesting.
I did not notice that. And that makes me laugh so much when you said that. It's like, yo, where the dad at? Like, it's just like, oh, I didn't realize that. So,
is there a Mr. Shmi? And she's like, no, you know, there isn't. And like, Rob and I were joking that maybe she was like, yeah, it was Immaculate Conception. Like, leave me alone. Like, it's a lie. You know, it's like, I don't want to talk to you about this. This isn't your business, you weirdo.
It's not your business. I met you earlier today.
Which also, by the way, sorry, on a complete note about the Immaculate Conception, and we'll talk more about that in another one, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because, God, that's stupid.
I've got a whole thing ready for it.
But also, you know what? There's other religions and philosophies besides Western philosophy that everyone has to be Jesus. Like, literally do something else. God, man. Just the amount of things where it's just like, how do we make this character interesting? I don't know. Make him a Jesus allegory? Okay. Well, literally, there's other philosophies out there. There's other characters out there. There's other things you can delve into and explore and other religions. Just open a book and take a look. Like, just stop with the Immaculate Conception Jesus stories.
That's what the Force is for. They're using the other religions to talk about the Force. And, you know, they cover other languages. They've got, you know, Sanskrit going on in Duel of the Fates that they then, like, change the words to. They're fine, Kevin. They've got enough representation.
Totally.
They can just have this Jesus child who can do everything.
But you are right, though. Like, Qui-Gon is bad in this movie. All his decisions are not good decisions. And he argues with the Jedi Council, which also the Jedi Council, oof. When he talked about, like, that line just now, by the way, Josh, that you played where Dave was just kind of like, George definitely saw the Jedi Council differently than, like, how I would have seen it. Yeah, and how most of us have seen it. He saw it in a boring, dumb, awful way. And then, like, was one of the worst things to happen to the Jedi were these prequels. But, like, Qui-Gon especially is just, oh my gosh, like, none of his decisions are good. He seems to never again emote or care or do anything. And at the end of the day, he asks his his apprentice to be like, hey, you know that thing that the rest of the council didn't want me to do? Do that for me. That's my dying wish. I want you to go against the Jedi Council and just do what I want. Yeah. Okay? I guess
my favorite thing about Qui-Gon Jinn is he's like, all right, it's Duel with the Fates time. This is a very important fight. Yeah. I can tell that everything's really on the line right now, and there's just this weird little red door that's separating me from... I gotta just sit down for a second.
Let me sit down.
I gotta sit down for a second, and I just gotta take a breath, and I gotta take a minute, and like I'm just gonna charge up. I'm gonna power up. And if I know that a lot of people may look at this moment and be like, dude, why are you napping? It's a fight. But I tell you, if I go out on the other side of that door and I kick Darth Maul's ass, I'm gonna look like a badass.
I'm gonna look so cool. Oh no, I'm gonna look so
cool. And then it doesn't work.
He just every dancer knows, don't sit down, all of your energy goes to the floor.
Momentum.
You gotta
Darth Maul is pacing back and forth. He's keeping that heart rate up.
He's gotta be going.
I worked out long enough to know you want to keep that heart rate up.
He should be parkouring off the walls to keep his flippy and kickies going, or else he's not gonna be able to flip and kick. If he was able to flip and kick, he wouldn't have got stabbed like that.
Yeah.
Another fun George Lucas symmetry, by the way, that I caught. Is when Obi-Wan does his like little jump over Darth Maul and kills him, which is exactly what happens with Anakin, except Darth Maul clearly not good at this.
We talked about that fairly extensively on the recap. We talked about how Obi-Wan must have like never forgotten that day, and Obi-Wan must have been like, Darth Maul was such an idiot. He had the high ground. He should have just like thrown his lightsaber down and just like done some like force in the air type thing and just like heat seeking missiled me with the lightsaber.
I was
hanging on literally by my fingernails, and I just had to like alley-oop myself back up. This idiot. And so when he gets to that moment with Anakin in Revenge of the Sith and he's got the high ground, it's literally like, I've been here before, man, and I know what to do this time. You don't stand a chance. Don't fight me. I actually like that.
Not to mention the fact that there was like a billion things that could have been done. That whole like I have the high ground argument is crazy when you have force powers, but whatever. What I do like, and I don't think this is purposeful, maybe it is, who knows? Maybe it's the most subtle, purposeful thing that I do enjoy, is that everyone learns from this moment, because later on in the original trilogy, there's a point where Darth Vader's on the ground and Luke is standing on a catwalk, and Vader has the low ground, and he just goes, nope, and he throws his lightsaber at Luke to like knock him off of it. And I'm like, we all learned from this.
Everyone learned. Yeah. You know, this is these are moments that
except Qui-Gon, he learned nothing. He died.
No, well, he died. Well, Qui-Gon, he learned how to Force Ghost.
Do we see him ever again?
We know, but voice. You hear him, and you find out that Force Ghosts happen because Qui-Gon pioneered this.
Sort of, yeah.
Well, he's a dead now, and so I feel deceased. Better progressing through these movies, even though I know that there's going to be a slog. But at least I don't have to see Liam Neeson.
He's gone. He's anymore. Gone. He's dead. He's deceased. Qui-Gon Jinn, RIP.
Qui-Gon is gone.
He gone. Qui-Gon. All right. Final take from Kevin. Final take of the podcast. He's ready to go. He's taking a breath. He's like, he's smiling because either he knows he's got gold. Or
after Duel of the Fates, which may be the hottest take, this one is probably pretty hot, and I'm not coming at it to be purposefully hot, but here it is.
All right, hold on. Do we want to, should we draw out the suspense any further?
No, it's fine.
You just want to do it?
Yeah.
All right. You're sure?
Yes. Jake Lloyd.
100% positive? Okay,
is the Jake best Lloyd. Actor in this film because he's the only one doing it. He's the only person in this movie actually acting. And you can say that I'm being crazy, and everyone's like, oh, he overacts. Well, he's 8, for one. And two, he's overacting a little bit. The only reason it's so more noticeable is because no one else is acting. So, of course, he seems over the top. But even from when he shows up, This is
good. It's hyperbolic, but inaccurate, but this is good.
I don't know if it's inaccurate. Maybe hyperbolic. But for one, he emotes. He's the only person in this movie that actually has facial expressions, that has emotion to scenes, that shows anything happening to him. He also does things with his hands. When he first shows up and he's actually cleaning something while talking to Amidala, while everyone literally just stands there and does nothing, like all humans do. We just don't use our arms. We do nothing. like he's actually has like little flourishes like that, which I think works because that's what actors do. And like, here's the thing. No one can read the line yippee and pull it off. Zero people. People point to that to be like, oh, that's so stupid. No one can say it.
Should
no
we do a yippee challenge?
No, because yeah. we all no. lose if we do that, Josh. Nobody yeah, wins in a yippee challenge.
Terrible. Yeah.
And the thing is, here's the thing. Here's the ultimate thing. He's 8 years old, right? This is he's an okay actor. He's not that bad. What would have helped him, what would have been good is if he had a director who directed him. It's not his fault. He's a young actor child. Even Haley Joel Osment had a director behind him, and he was also 10. 2 years can make a difference, people. And that's the thing. So what happened in this movie is wild. The fact that people afterwards went after Jake Lloyd as if he was somehow the problem here is insane. What happened to him
and from the Kevin and directed the movie.
Yeah.
It's, come on.
Jake Lloyd is actually just George Lucas is time traveling Jake Lloyd.
Yeah, and he hated himself and he wanted his own misery. So, like, for real though, like what happened to Jake Lloyd after this and to Ahmed Best is absurd. And to me, like, that should have been a clue about a lot of this fandom and the danger of this fandom. The fact that they bullied this kid like crazy.
The fandom fact that,
like,
menace.
Like what they did to him is insane.
I gotta laugh at all the time. You may not have heard it, but I saw it.
No.
You're just shaking your head at me.
I'm mid-brain. No.
Okay.
I mean, the fandom menace is what they're called. That is an accurate call of what this group of the fandom is. They're called the fandom menace.
Is that real?
That is real, that real, Josh. It is real. Oh. They're called the fandom menace because they won Star Wars. But also, like, to me, that also like downplays them, right? Because like, this isn't like a fun little thing for these people. They are not. Like, just jokey, mean fans. They bullied this kid. They almost drove Ahmed Best to commit suicide. Like, this is awful. And especially for a kid who was 8 years old to, like, go through this. Because they blamed him for some of this stuff, which is wild. And especially watching this, he's not that bad. That's the part that makes me, like, mind blown. Is like, so many people criticize him and watching him and being like, he actually could have been a good actor if he had a little bit of help, if people directed him a little bit more. He had the trappings to be a good actor. He was the only person in this movie who was trying, it felt like, to actually show emotions, to actually do something. And that's what happened to him over it. It's crazy and it's insane. So the idea, like, is he professionally the best actor amongst his crew? No, there's a lot of really good actors in here. It's just that none of them actually acted at all.
All right. Okay. So delivered. Now I have to defend a few people. So Ray Park is acting the shit out of Darth Maul physically. He's got like the gnarly teeth growl. He's got like a lot of the physicality. There's a lot of physicality there in that acting. Ray Park is acting the shit out of Darth Maul. I want to give a shout I want to give a shout out to my guy, Hugh Quarshie, who plays Captain Panaka. Who is one of my favorite characters since I was a kid. I freaking loved Panaka. And he was one of the only people who knew, he's like, I don't want to be in these anymore. And so he never came back. He's like, I did Phantom Menace and I want to be a part of this. This isn't working out. He's great. How about Ralph Brown as Rick Ollier, commander of the Naboo Royal Space Fighter Corps?
That little guy like did it. Panaka. Captain Panaka was awesome and like a ride or die for Padme. Right.
He had ride or one die. Scene where he actually actually does acting is what I'm trying to say. Like everyone else, he had one moment and it was when Padme came out with him and he's like, the Royal Highness wishes that you take the handmaiden. That was the one scene where I actually was like, oh, he has an emotion here and he's going to look away and he looks like about it.
That's Greg it. Proops.
Like everyone else.
Greg Proops is voice acting the shit out of his half of Fode and Bead, the two-headed announcer at the podcasting.
If you gotta go to Fode and Bead,
right? No,
Josh is grasping at anything to provide comedy.
Here's the real one is Ian McDiarmid. You don't have to like Palpatine because they did all the stuff with Palpatine in the future movies and stuff and Palpatine oversaturation and everything. But this is a character that actually has an arc in the movie. He's an actor who has a secret. Yeah, we all know it because we've seen the other things and we know that he's the emperor. That dude's the emperor. This guy who seems like benevolent, senator is actually the guy in all the holograms and stuff. But he is playing one character who is acting within the movie. And I think he does a great job. I think Ian McDiarmid across the franchise, even when the character is shitty, I think the way that he plays the character is excellent and defining for a lot of different actors and characters sort of like in this archetype. You know, this is like very foundational for like a Benjamin Linus type of character, of somebody who like presents one way and then secretly is something else. And he's the Phantom Menace. And that stuff really does work for me is his performance and like the way that like he walks into Padme's room is like, oh my God, that really worked. And can you believe it? They want me to be the, this is unbelievable. And like he actually is like, I think like, leaning into it as an actor, hamming up that stuff, and you can, knowing who he is for real underneath all of that, I vibe that stuff out and I like, hate him so hard. And I think it's very effective because of both like the backstory of the character, the front story of like where we're moving towards, but a lot of it is performance based. So I think that dude acts. I think that guy acts really well.
I was just going to say, valid points on both sides. I was wondering if we could talk about a different thing related to Jake Lloyd. But go ahead first, Kevin.
No, I was just going to say, like, I think he does a fine job. I mean, it's difficult to separate it in the sense of, like, we know he's Palpatine. So, like, for us watching, and part of me is just like it's like with, what's his name? Obadiah Stane in Iron Man. You're like, how do none of you know that's a bad guy? Just look at him. Listen to him. Like, he just has a manner where he plays it off okay, but I don't think he plays it off as, like, as charmingly as well as Ben Linus, honestly, because I think Ben Linus does a really good job when he first shows up to have this, like, kind of panicky, unknown quality to him. His personality and how he acts is different enough, and I don't see as much of a range of difference between it's me, Palpatine, to it's me, Palpatine. Like, there's not enough. It's not like you're Kevin Conroying Bruce Wayne to Batman, which is a noticeable difference. It's not like you're doing Christopher Reeve. Like, that could be something where I'm just like, oh yeah, that's a huge difference. That's they fooled a lot of people. But well, everyone in this movie is full of bad decisions.
Down in this movie, right? He has the tone. I think there are layers to the performance, at least. He's supposed to have to tone it down because the audience is not supposed to know how evil he is yet. And he has to, like, figure out how he's going to, like, take over the Senate and like, you know, be a politician and, like, schmooze with people. And so we get, like, little glimpses of, like, a half smile when things start to go his way and all of that. But, like, I agree that Jake Lloyd as Anakin is fantastic in the movie and, like, one of the best parts, if not the best part. There's a couple things, though, that are off. From what I've read and seen, the character of Anakin in this movie was supposed to be 12 originally, and then they decided to de-age him to, like, make him 8 instead.
That would have been so much better.
Yeah, so that it would be more of a hardship when he had to leave Shmi. Like, they thought that a 12-year-old wouldn't feel anything about having to leave their mother a slave on another planet and go off with a bunch of people that he just met days before. But that's fine. What's not fine, though, is the way that I kind of think of Padme and Anakin's relationship in this movie is as like a babysitter and a kid. Like, anyone who's done babysitting knows that, like, the kids, like, kind of fall in love with you in, like, their own little, like, weird infatuation way, but it's, like, really just their way of, like, getting to know you. What makes it weird is the end of the movie when everyone is standing there for the ceremony, and it almost, like, Natalie Portman's demeanor changes a little bit when she sees this 8-year-old that she is, for all intents and purposes, I'm going to call used to babysit. And it's just like, oh, young Padawan. And then I know that we flash forward and then in the next movie, we get like older Anakin, right?
Yeah, like Hayden Christensen's going to show up.
Hayden Christensen shows up.
Yeah, he's coming.
But
he's coming.
Like, there's still a 6-year age difference between these two people, allegedly.
More than that.
Padme's supposed to be like 14 and Anakin's 8.
I thought she was 18 and he was 8. I thought there was a decade.
Ugh. That makes it worse.
I don't know off the top of my head, but you know, it's weird. Head, but
that's what I thought.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any disagreement on the panel that this is weird.
That would have been so much better because 12 would have been closer in age for them as well. Like, I didn't know about the 12 thing, and it's again, oh, who must have made that decision? But
George Lucas made that decision.
That's, you know, that's the oof.
No one said no.
Yeah. No one, you can't say, that's the thing. No. You put people in charge that you can't say no to. And then you get the Phantom Menace.
Yeah. And you know, Josh, look, I'm being obviously hyperbolic and just purposely Kevin-y when I'm like, he's better than Palpatine. Like, no, Palpatine's great. Come on. For everything that comes from it, you know, like it's just one of those situations where it's wild that this kid had so much stuff thrown at him where he really doesn't do that bad of a job. He's like, I do think he is a little bit extra, but he's also, again, he's 8 and he's reading lines that are very bad and doing the best he can with them. And at least, again, at least he's trying to do acting. At least he's emoting. There's something you can get from this character and you can feel from him as he's going through these motions, going through the story, that you get nothing from Obi-Wan except your past connection to him, and nothing from Qui-Gon. You barely get stuff from Padme because of how, you know, she acts throughout the movie. And it would have been interesting if there was more of a contrast for her that Natalie Portman could have played with, where when she's the queen and speaking one way, and then when she's the handmaiden and acting and speaking another. But there's not that much of a difference because, again, it's the director's job to help direct that and help bring that to life, or the screenwriter to maybe give a little more information. Problem is, when they're one and the same, they're not saying nothing because they're just having the same thing. And that's where it ends up in this movie. And just 8 and 18, 8 and anything, the look she gives him, Latanya's absolutely right, where she's just like, I'm going to bang that kid. And she's like, what are you doing? What are you doing right now? Yeah. It's like, wild.
And then the thing that you have to think of is the director told her how to look at this kid during the scene.
That's the one directing note he gave in the entire movie.
All right, now I've got one note for you, which is, this little kid's kind of hot, huh?
Oh, no.
George?
Settle down, Jorge. Yeah. Like, get it together. Yes. So, yeah, I fully stand this little child, Jake Lloyd, in this movie. It makes me very sad that Jake Lloyd and Ahmed Best ended up being the, you know, and then later, Hayden Christensen. But he was like much better able to handle it apparently than.
Well, he was Jake Lloyd or he Ahmed was a Best. Lot older, right? Like Jake Lloyd was like 8 and he went to high school, and what a terrible place high school is. Imagine it for this kid. And, you know, we didn't mention it here, but I talked about it a little bit before we started recording. That, like, Jake Lloyd now is, like, it's unfortunate what's going on, because he's diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenic. He's living with his family because he can't take care of himself. And it's awful. And the worst part is he's diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic and he actually had people that were after him. And it's awful. It's awful to have that and grow up with something like that. And you have these fans, quote unquote, who reacted this way, who can't separate fiction from reality. He's an actor playing a role. He's not the actual person. It's the people who are spinning on Joffrey, the kid who's playing Joffrey on the street. And you're just like, what are you doing? Like, the inability to separate the fact that this is a person playing a role, and that also, like, it's not his fault that the role ended up this particular way, is insane. Like, it's so sad. It's so unfortunate that, like, this is what happened to this poor guy. And the fans are still here acting the same way. These same fans are doing the same thing to other people in modern day. And it's unfortunate and it's sad. And there should have been a sign when it happened of where we were headed, but we didn't read. We didn't know the prophecy about who was going to bring the dark side of the Force. Probably should have paid attention to that one. But here we are.
Oh, my God. Here we are. Some really spicy Star Wars discourse here. Duel of debates. I'm thrilled about it.
I wish I could lighten the mood by throwing on a Jar Jar voice, but that's not going to lighten the mood. That's just going to make it worse.
No, don't do it.
No.
Don't do that. Here, I'll lighten the mood.
For those who can't see, Josh is also dancing right now.
Yeah, he's doing all
jig. This is pretty good. Some of my best moves, if I'm going to be honest with you. That's Duel of Debates.
Where was that stuff, though? Where was that? Should have been more fun. Like, it's weird that the fun stuff is like the wacky, like, shenanigans type thing, like the Jar Jar shenanigans.
Old, he
right?
got old. He got old, and he's like, you know what's fun is computers.
You know what the kids are gonna love? I'll tell you what the kids are gonna love. The kids are gonna love this cartoon character. He's gonna step in doo-doo at one point. He's literally gonna step in doo-doo. It's gonna be great.
They love a computer.
Who did George Lucas just become? Was that it wasn't even J. Jonah Jameson? I don't know what voice
it was a little bit. Yeah.
Here's what's up. So a lot of really salient points brought up here on this podcast about Star Wars, The Phantom Menace. For my sins, I will always love this movie. I'm sorry. Yeah. I can't help it. It's an important movie to me. I've seen this in theaters more than I've seen anything. It is like deeply embedded in me. I can't help it. I cannot help it. It's a bad movie. It's not good.
You can love a bad movie. I love a lot of bad movies.
Absolutely.
It's a bad movie that I love a lot.
That's the thing, man. Like, as I've said before, you're allowed to love bad movies. I love a lot of bad movies. We literally just talked about Twilight earlier.
This is a bad one, though. It is. It definitely is. It definitely isn't good.
But you acknowledge it. You're just like, look, it has a special place in my heart. There's a lot of nostalgia I saw when I was a kid. I have a lot of great memories from this movie, and I have great memories from Clone Wars when we talk about that. But that's also a pretty terrible
movie. You keep conflating Clone Wars and Attack of the Clones.
It's
a dangerous thing to conflate, you know, because Clone Wars people love, and then Attack of the Clones. And this is going to be an interesting thing, is because the next time the three of us are going to be around the table talking Star Wars, we'll be talking Attack of the Clones. And that was the movie where, like, immediately when I saw it in theaters, I was like, so like I felt that right away, and I haven't gone back and revisited this in a few years. I'm really interested to check it out again. Well, Tanya, I'm really curious to get your takes on Clones, on Attack, first, because you haven't seen this one yet.
I've never seen either of the next two movies in this trilogy, but I will say that this movie, and I'm sure Attack of the Clones will as well, made me want to get back into my watch of Clone Wars.
Yes.
I got pretty like good with it and got a pretty good clip and then fell off of it because everything came out last weekend.
Yeah.
But this definitely did renew my, you know, desire to revisit, you know, or to watch Clone Wars for the first time. And I'm sure Attack of the Clones will more than do that as well.
Yeah. So I'm excited to like talk that one through, because I've got very little nostalgia for it. So I'll be ready to go. And I'll be curious how that conversation goes. This is the end of us talking Star Wars in terms of Phantom Menace, the three of us, but it's not the end of our Phantom Menace coverage. Next week, we want to hear from you out there in the listenership in the long time to go land. If you've got feedback, if you've got fun things you want us to talk about, we're also going to have some fun shenanigans for you as well. Brooklyn Zed and DJ LaBelle Klein are going to be joining me, the great Troy Steinmetz. We're going to be talking Star Wars Phantom Menace with a feedback show to close out our Phantom Menace coverage, get some more takes from some people. Troy is not a huge super Star Wars fan, but loves Star Wars. Zed has seen certain Star Wars movies and hasn't seen many others, and watched Phantom Menace with us in the Discord for the very first time, and their great take ends up being very much along these same lines of, we stan a local boy, Anakin Skywalker. So they're going to have lots of fun talking about Jake Lloyd and his work in this movie. So we want to hear from you, StarWarsApostShowRecaps.com, or if you're in the Discord, tag me, tag Brendan Fitzpatrick. We want to get your feedback. We will get into all of that. Kevin Latanya and I, we're going to get into WandaVision pretty soon. Folks, we are, as of this recording, we've got, 5 hours to go before the episode drops? Something like that? Y'all staying up?
Wow. No. I'm
not. Y'all staying up?
I don't know if I can.
No. I'll wake up first thing. I won't check my tweets. I won't check anything. I just go straight to my Disney Plus and I watch that WandaVision. So WandaVision's coming out pretty soon here, episode 3. Critics got to see this one. They say it's a doozy, so I'm excited. I want to know what's going on here with what's up with all the strange commercials and stuff. So we're going to talk about all of that coming up on Everything is Super, Kevin Latanya and myself. Of course, the three of us also, if you're a member of the Post Show Recaps Patreon, you know we competed in Dungeons and Dragons.
competed. We worked together, Josh. That was an adventure.
Until a certain point when everyone got like got that Frodo fever, right?
Everyone got that one ring.
You know, we got into a little bit of that territory, and it was great, great fun. I'd love to do that again sometime. That could be fun.
I would love to do Dungeons and Dragons with because one of the things that our great dungeon master, our Philly, was saying is that the way that it ended, not to spoil anything, is that it opens up the possibility for us to play lots of games with people in the Discord based on where we ended up as our characters. So I would be happy to play D&D if people want to do that anytime.
Yes. Yes. So that would be really fun. There may be some D&D plans in the hopper. Of course, there's also the Dungeons & Dragons mechanisms to play in the Discord that are already up. If that sounds interesting to you and you want to play some Dungeons & Dragons, but you don't have a lot of friends to play Dungeons & Dragons with in this moment in time, we got friends for you. Sign up. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. We're playing D&D in the Discord. It's a thing. It's happening. Check it out. Follow LaTanya on the Twitter bots or on the Bird app, as she likes to call it. At LK Starks. Kevin is at Kev Mahadeo. Either of you got anything else you'd like to add?
Yippee!
Yes! All right, well, that'll do it. We'll see you at the feedback show in a week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye!
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.